to Creative Conversations. I'm Roger Humphrey. In this episode, I'm pleased to welcome musician, educator, and author Lisa Plass. Please join us as we discuss her teaching studio survival during COVID, the wonderful success of her books, and the challenges of balancing home and career. Before we begin, please take a moment to hit subscribe or follow. It's an easy thing, and you'll really be helping me a lot. Also, if you or someone you know plays guitar or ukulele, then you really need to go over to rogerhumphrey.com and check out the stuff that's free there. There's a link in the description below. Thank you.
Progress.
And we are welcoming Lisa Plass to the program. Thank you, Lisa, so much for coming on. I appreciate this a lot.
Well, thank you for having me.
So you've been a busy woman in your life. You've done quite a bit. So we really have a lot to unpack. I mean, I could probably spend all day talking to you, but I won't do that to you. let's start. Number one, people should know that you are a music teacher and a studio owner. Let's talk about your studio a little bit, if we can do that. Now, you teach flute and voice, is that correct?
I do, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I opened my studio back in September of 1998, so we have just finished our 25th year in business.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I have a team of teachers that work with me, so we cover all instruments and vocal lessons as well. And we do all ages, all levels. We also now, since the pandemic, we have virtual lessons. So we offer both in-person and virtual. We did have some of our students that had relocated during the pandemic, but they didn't want to leave their teachers. So now they see their teacher virtually. So that's the one positive, is that they got to continue. But 25 years later, we're still plugging along. We have our students that come in. We give them the recitals. We have, we're performing all over the place with them. So it's a really wonderful situation. It also allowed me to have a lot of flexibility when my kids were young. So if they needed something, if I had to go to school for them for a program, or if they were homesick, just being able to have that flexibility made the difference, as a young mom with, three little kids running around.
That's a full-time job in itself.
It is.
So you teach at all ages. I noticed on your website that you ages 6 and up. Am I remembering that right?
Oh, yeah. And in some cases, because every student is different. We've had some students as young as 4 years old that have started, like 3 and 4 years old, because they would come in. We always say to the mom, let's have a trial lesson, see how they respond. And there are some kids that could have sat there for 2 hours straight having a lesson.
Wow.
So they were very attentive. It's a case by case. So the youngest that we've had is 3. And then we have gone all the way up to where I've had students that have come in, they're in their 80s, and they wanted to pick up a new hobby because in their retirement, they were like, I always dreamed of playing piano, or I always wanted to play guitar. And they came in and take lessons with us. So truly, it's all ages, all levels, on any instrument. If you have a passion, we will help you realize that passion.
How many teachers do you have on staff?
Right now, I have 8 teachers that work with me. Yeah.
That's good. That's pretty busy.
Yeah.
I know. Do you work with? Is this all one-on-one lessons, or do you have group lessons as well?
Majority is one-on-one. There's a couple situations where we have like husbands and wives that come in, or siblings that might want. Through the years, we have found that really that one-on-one lesson, they gain so much from it. You can get a group lesson in school. You can sit in a room with 10 other kids, but you're not getting that individual that you need, that focus. So when we have those exceptions, like maybe it's twins that'll come in and they both want to learn piano and they're beginners on the same, then that's okay. Or like a husband and wife, you know, because they want to learn how to play guitar together, you know, things like that.
Sure.
So, you know, we'll do some exceptions like that, but for the most part, we have found the most success with those one-on-one lessons.
Okay, and when you're working with, I mean, I used to teach, I'm mostly retired guitar teacher, and I used to teach, I used to enjoy teaching groups only because they don't make the kind of progress that you do in a one-on-one lesson. It's just, you walk away from that, but they give each other moral support.
Yes.
When it's like, oh God, I'm the dumbest person in the world, and you look next and you go, well, the guy next to me is a little dumber than that, so okay. And they're in there helping each other, so the amount of time, I always thought that it was kind of fun to do that for beginning lessons and just cover the basics, and then for those that wanted more one-on-one and things like that. And the thing I always liked about group lessons, personally, from a business standpoint, maybe not so much as a teacher, but as a businessman, was that there's only so many half hour or 1 hour spots in the day, and I could take a half an hour or 1 hour spot, and I could sell it six or seven times to a group, where I can only sell it once to an individual. And so I like that. And so, but that's, you know, it's a different critter when you're teaching virtual lessons, and it's the same thing. Your style of teaching and your expectations have to change. You know, I started teaching online almost a dozen years ago, in part for some of the same things that you were talking about, where I had young students who were going to be gone to grandpa and grandma's for the summer, and they didn't want to stop taking lessons, you know. And so I started, and it's I found very quickly my style of teaching had to change, and my expectations had to change, and that this could work, but it had to work on its own terms. You can't match it to something else, you know. So I always found that to be pretty nifty, and I still teach. What I handful of lessons that I still teach, just student. I don't take any new ones. I'm just letting it dwindle.
Oh, yes. Yeah, as they age out.
And right, exactly. I got three kids who've been with me forever right now that are graduating from high school this coming year. So, you know, I'll be three students less this time next year.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
they'll be off to college and so on.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
Forgot where I was going with that. But I have found that teaching online, I still teach online. That's all I do. I don't teach it in my studio here at all anymore. And I find that, yeah, it seems to work pretty good. There are some people that really would rather go knees to knees with me, but I'm just really not set up for it anymore. So, but it's I think it's I think it works very well. When the pandemic came around, I mean, it for me, for a lot of people, a lot of teachers and a lot of students, that was really a tough change. I'd already been doing it with some students, and all my students had done makeup lessons and foul weather situations and things like that, you know. And so it was something that we could do, and it worked out pretty handy. So it was a sideways step once, you know, the pandemic's here, we got to do it online. Okay, do it online. Everybody's raring to go, no problem. So.
Yeah, no, that it's great that you had had that. We had never done that. So when everything shut down, you know, back in 2020, you know, we closed the studio because they were saying, you know, take 2 weeks and by April
Right.
1st, you know, you'll be able to go back. But within a week, as I was watching the news, I said, I don't think we're going to be open on April 1st. So I quickly reached out to all the teachers and I said, I think we need to go virtual. Let's pivot. And, you know, let's not just wait until we can reopen. Let's see if we can do something with this. So, you know, we started looking into it and then within, oh, so we only went a week without not teaching because we were just course correcting, figuring it all out. And then we were able to start meeting with the kids. And, you know, it was a year and a half before we came back in person because between all the vocal students that you could not see them in
Sure.
person, you know,
Right.
it was very difficult. Like piano and, you know, guitar and bass guitar and drums. That was easier because you could wear a mask and you could go
Right.
in and take your lessons. But any of the woodwind, brass, and especially vocalists, you know, we were just like, okay, we can't do anything with that.
Right.
So, you know, we closed our doors on March 13, 2020, and then walked back in September 1st of 2021,
Wow.
which it was very bizarre. It's like it felt like time stood still, but yet it, blew past, and it still feels weird, the concept of time now, that I can't believe that we actually went through a pandemic and here we are back to a more normal. But I still have students that are canceling on a weekly basis. Somebody is always sick and said, I tested positive, I have COVID. And fantastically enough, we have it in place. So we're like, okay, you're virtual today. No problem.
Yeah, that works out real
So
handy. That
it
it.
does. It does. And then sometimes now parents have even said, oh my God, I'm stuck. I am in traffic. I cannot get home. We course correct and we're like, all right, tell Johnny that we're going to send a Zoom link. We'll meet him at 4:30 on Zoom.
Just like that.
And so instead of having your no shows and your late cancels and oh, we need to reschedule, it has allowed for a lot more flexibility, which has been great.
I find it great for a whole lot of reasons. One of the things that I started during the pandemic, I'd had some people asking about ukulele lessons, which I had never really taught before. And it's an easy sideways step. So I said, yeah, okay, let's do some ukulele lessons. And I was working with very young kids. And what I found with 5 and 6 years old that many times they want to do it, but their attention span is not as good as you would like it to be for a 30-minute lesson. But because we were doing it virtual, I started doing 2 15-minute lessons every week.
Oh, that's nice.
And I mean, you can't do that in a brick and mortar situation, but on virtual,
No.
they
Yeah, that's
walk in the
true.
kitchen, walk into the kitchen, and turn on the computer, and they can do 15 minutes easy. But I also had a couple of kids who were 10 or 12 years old who'd been with me prior to the pandemic, and they had attention deficit disorder, and so they had attention issues anyway. And so by switching to 2 15-minute lessons instead of one single 30-minute lesson, we made great progress. So that was a benefit of the virtual that I just couldn't get, in person. So that was pretty handy. I like that a lot. So.
Yeah, that's actually a great solution because sometimes you lose a child because they can't sit for the 30 minutes
Right.
and
And
then they're frustrated.
the other nice thing is that because I'm seeing them twice a week, they don't have to wait 7 weeks to see me or 7 days to see me again. So
Yeah, it's more reinforcement that they're getting.
they have a lesson on Monday and turn around, they have another one on Thursday. And
That
it's
that's nice because also if they don't practice a lot, then at least they're seeing you twice a week, so that's a
exactly.
help to reinforce the concept.
It was really handy. I like that a lot. So, and you're working with young children. Are you doing any of the Suzuki programs or any of the other franchise programs like that?
No, we actually are doing the traditional. We're teaching them from the beginning. They're getting their theory books. So for whatever instrument that it is, we are learning teaching them from the beginning.
That's good.
For our string students, my string teacher, she does use the Suzuki books because she likes the music that's in there,
Oh,
but
okay.
she is teaching them how to read from the beginning. She's not doing it by rote. She wants them to know that this is a C and this is a sharp and this is a beat and I want you to do
Right.
this. So, but she likes the music. She said, so she said I buy the books and but I don't teach it through that concept. So,
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan of the rote. I did it for about 2 years, 3 years, something like that, and it works sort of. But the thing that they don't tell you about are all students that it doesn't work with. And so, what I did, I actually wrote a primer for my young kids of some basic folk songs. A dozen, 10 or 12 songs, and I did it all in tablature because it's a very easy system to learn how to read for guitar, and they just play melodies, no chords. The little fingers can't even hardly do the melodies, let alone the chords. And but they play these melodies, and we sing the songs. The words are in there, and so on. And so almost immediately they have something that sounds like music. And it takes, depending on the child, 3 or 4 months to go through that and learn all of those songs, and then. Notes, FACE, every good boy does fine, blah 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 blah. And we do, and it just so all that is just kind of, it gets their fingers working and it gets their brains working and it hits that instant gratification button,
I was just going to say that. Yeah, you need to. You have to grab them in the first couple lessons because they need to leave playing something or singing something
Right.
that they recognize, because then that's what motivates them. Because if you're just saying play a C and they're like bum, they're like, okay, now what? And then you're bored. So, so we always start off, because we and I always ask every single time, what's your favorite song? And then they'll whatever they tell us, we teach them in whatever form, the simplest version that they can do it. But they'll be like, Mom, I learned, And then the parent is happy, the child is happy, and then you have a happy customer that keeps coming back.
There you go. Yeah, and it's and of course while the child may be your student, the parent is your client.
Yes. And you got to
So
make them happy.
you better believe because they're writing the checks every month. So
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
and you don't do any retail kind of stuff. You don't sell their books or anything like that, or do you?
No, we had tried that in the beginning, but you know what? We just really wanted to focus on the students and, working with them and doing what we need to for them. It got too much in terms, and also keeping the stock, because there's a lot of overhead when you have to have the retail portion.
Right.
We were even doing for a while we were renting instruments, but we had a company that we were working with. But sadly, that stopped during the pandemic because nobody was
Sure.
renting instruments,
Of
nothing
course.
was happening. And especially with the issues of the sanitary sterilization process. So everything was kind of put on hold. So we stopped doing that as well. So now we're just strictly you come in, have lessons, and that's it. That's what we do.
Early in my career, I was connected with a couple of guitar builders or I should say middlemen, wholesalers, and I had an opportunity to sell, and I could order them one off, which was kind of nice. But what I found was that it was a distraction. There was always that tendency of saying, we could get you a better guitar. Get that out of it, just needed to be out of the conversation, and it found that distraction and that little bit of temptation to try to make an extra $50 or something like that. It's like, no. So I'd far and away prefer to work, with a retail organization and let them handle all that kind of stuff. And just as long as we were friendly, that worked out pretty good. So now you've written a couple of books, and one of them is about a student, young child taking music lessons. Maricela discovers music. Can we talk about that a little bit?
So when the pandemic hit, obviously I instantly became unemployed, other than, teaching the lessons online. But
Sure.
everything that I did, all my performing gigs and shows that I was doing, it all came to a stop. So I had a lot of extra time on my hands, and I was on Instagram one day, and something popped up saying, join this writing conference. And I've always been a writer. That's like my side passion. I love to write poetry, writing lyrics when I'm writing music, writing short stories, so, and it's my, I guess, my mental release. I get to just put it down. I have a
Sure.
journal, so it intrigued me. It was a, reasonable, it was a women's in publishing type of summit. So I thought, all right, let me check it out and see what happens. And through that, I put together a parenting memoir that I'm going to be releasing sh soon. I just haven't done it because, life gets in the way now. But in one of my writing groups, one of the writers said, I have a challenge for everybody. Let's write a children's book and come back to the next meeting with some ideas. Well, not only did I come back with the ideas, I came back with the entire book.
That's great. I love
I just, after the meeting, I thought, children's book. Never would have thought about doing that at all, but I could not, the idea just flowed, and within 4 or 5 hours, I had the entire children's book written. I had
Wow.
the outline, I had the story, I knew what I wanted to do for pictures. And it's basically my story of how I, my passion for music and what led me to do what I'm doing. And it's going to be a 5-part series. So
Oh.
I'm currently working on the second book, which is Maricela Goes to College. So it's going to be my entire college experience, what I did. And so it started more as like a children's book where you could read it as a bedtime story, but it's going to become more of a chapter book. as Maricela gets
Sure,
older. So she
sure.
goes to college. So part of what I'm working on for this second book is putting together a playlist, like all the music that I had to learn, all the key songs and solos that I did on flute, that I did vocally, that I did with my chamber choir, that I did with the wind ensemble, like all these key pieces that, kids can say, "Hey, what's that? What does that song sound like?" So it's a little bit of like a music appreciation through the book,
Oh.
and a glossary of some of the basics of music, things that I had learned, but just giving it a simpler version for children to understand. So it's not just the story, but it's also a little bit of music theory, music appreciation, music history, so that's how the second book is shaping up right now.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it is. It's basically it's my life. So the name Maricela, when I was in high school and in Spanish class, that was my name that my Spanish teacher gave me was Maricela, and she always referred to me as Maricela. I was never Lisa. If she'd see me in the hall, and she'd be like, "Hola, Maricela," and then she'd be like, she would ask me. I would hear her na calling me, "Maricela, are you going to practice the flute?" So it just kind of stuck, that's what she always called me. And whenever she said it, people were like, "Who's she talking to?" I was like, "It's Yeah, so that's how I got the name, because I was trying to decide who, what should I name her. But that voice, that teacher, she always, her voice is always in my head, because wherever she saw me, she called me by that name.
It's funny the impact that teachers have on us, and once you're aware of that, then as a teacher, it becomes kind of a, not really a burden, but you certainly take that serious.
It's true, because you don't know what element of your teaching
Oh,
style
yeah.
is somebody going to pick up.
Right.
Is it going to be a corny joke that you said? Is it going to be a little catchphrase that you said? And but I realize that these certain phrases that teachers had said to me throughout my life, they stick. And you remember them as clear as the day they happen.
I ran into a now gentleman who's having a very successful career in business, and he's doing very well. And I hadn't seen him since he was in high school or so. And so we chatted briefly, and he made a comment one time that a phrase that I had used about he was a slacker when it came to practice, and I had to get after him, and so. One week he practiced really, really, really hard. When he came in, he played really, really well. He played better than he'd ever played before, and he was really kind of startled at what had happened. And so that turned him into a good student. And I made the comment to him at that time. I said, "Worthwhile things always take hard work." And so he said he remembered that going through college, and now he's in business. And he said, "It's hard work, but," he said, "the worthwhile stuff always is." And I thought, okay. I should listen to my own advice. I'm kind of a lazy bum.
Yeah. No,
But
I mean, what, as teachers, we do make a huge impact on our
oh, yeah.
student,
We really do.
so we always have to think about, what we're doing, what we're saying, how we're reacting to them. It's, for me, I always tell the kids, if you're not having fun, you shouldn't be here. That's really what
Well,
it is.
it kind of comes down to that. And I used to tell the students, and in front of the parents, I said, "I don't ever want you to practice." And they would look at me and go, "What?" I said, "I want you to play every day for about a half an hour or so." But that word practice is like, "Oh, I gotta practice, you know." But I say, "What, can you play?" So it's
Exactly. And that's, yeah.
just kind of twist those words around a little bit. So you
It's
have another
true.
book, Words of Wisdom from the Everyday Mom, is that right?
Yeah, that's the parenting memoir that's going to be releasing this fall.
Oh, okay, that's not out
Yeah,
yet.
yeah. Yeah, so that's actually how I started that writing group, summit when I attended, because I had had a loose thing. It basically is all the different notes that I had left my kids, because every morning I had a little chalkboard that I had on the kitchen table, and I'd put a phrase for the day, just something for them to look at and think of when they, went to school. And I started just keeping a journal with all of these little anecdotes that I was giving them, life lessons. We'd have conversations, and I'd come up with something for them to remember, saying, okay, when you're in this situation, do this. So I just kept this ongoing journal. And so when I went to this seminar, they were talking about how do you create books, develop your outlines, storylines, things like that. And I said, oh my God, I have a journal full of all of this stuff. So I took it and I started, developing it, working with other authors, getting them to beta read it and ARC read it. And so now it's done. I just have to be brave enough to put it out there because it's always you feel vulnerable. But
Oh, yeah.
the Maricela Discovers Music was my test. I wanted to see what would the response be, and I actually was overwhelmed by the response of the people that I knew that said, oh my God, I cried when I read
Oh,
your book.
that's
And I
wonderful.
said, wow. I said, really? And they were like, yeah, your story is so beautiful, and I can't wait to see the second book, and I'm so excited to see where Maricela goes. I said, well, you're looking at her. You know where she goes.
That's that's
But
wonderful.
they're so enthralled with the character, and I keep having to remind them. I was like, it's me. I was like, that's me.
Now, I know this is available through your website, and it's also available through Amazon, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, it's on Amazon. So if anybody is interested, and I do have, this is what it looks like. This is my book.
Okay.
So yeah. So it was always one of those things that are on your bucket list, that you want to be a writer, and when I had to choose careers, I've always wanted to be a musician. That's all I could ever see myself
Right.
doing. I couldn't see myself doing anything else. So, I got my teaching degree, and so I can perform professionally but then also teach, and I have all the bases covered. So
Now, do you perform like you work with a community concert band, I believe, and you've been part of that.
I did that for many, many years, and which it was started out as the Ridgewood Concert Band, but then it changed now to the North Jersey Wind Symphony. I was with them for almost 20 years. I even served on their board. I was the president of their organization. But then what happened is with the studio, because I'm always there afternoons and evenings, I don't have that flexibility of saying I have to leave every Monday for a rehearsal, because if I have lessons, I have to be there for the
Exactly.
lessons. So as the studio took off, I started having to be more flexible with my performing schedule. So I do jobs, I get gigs for different things, and we'll take those jobs because it's not an every week, because I don't want to have to
Right.
block off and say I can never teach on Mondays when that's one of the most popular days, or a
Sure.
Wednesday, then that's when all these rehearsals are, where you have to leave. If I left the studio at 6:30, that's just too early to be
Yeah,
leaving,
that's half your income for
Exactly.
the
So I made that choice that, it's fine, so I do my professional gigs, on an as needed, and it's fun. It's more flexibility and a lot different organizations, different people. So I meet more people that way too, which is
Yeah,
nice.
I played a lot of gigs, but I found about 15 years ago, I got involved in the wedding business and started doing weddings. In Michigan, where I live, northern Michigan is a real haven for these outdoor weddings, and there's just venues everywhere. And so I found myself in the summertime, when the teaching slacked dreadfully, and so did the income, that I could balance that by doing these outdoor weddings. And so I cut down to about 4 or 5 days of teaching every week, and had my weekends just for the weddings. And
That's nice.
it worked out. That was a nice balancing act. It was always a little tricky in May and September, just because there was that transition of going back to, coming in and out of these schedules. But yeah, and it was fun. And I've always said, geez, I'm playing beautiful music for people who are all dressed up, and it's the best day of their life. And I'm well paid. Thank you.
It's like a win-win, and it never feels like work. It's
Oh, no.
just, you know, because you're doing something that you love. So for me, when I
Sure.
have a gig, I don't consider it work. I'm just in heaven.
So,
I'm sitting there playing or singing and I'm happy.
there you go. Doesn't get any
Yeah,
better than that. So,
exactly.
well, believe it or not, we are all out of time, and I don't want to take
Wow.
up any more of your time. That went by in a hurry. I really enjoyed this a lot.
I did
So,
too.
so I'm going to go ahead and say goodbye now, and thank you again, and hopefully you'll be back on the show again sometime soon.
I would love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I really enjoyed talking with Lisa. Honestly, I'm inspired by her and others like her who use their talents to improve the quality of life for their students and for the communities they serve. I'm thankful she took time from her busy schedule to come on the show. And I'm thankful for you too. I really appreciate you, and I hope you listen to other episodes of Creative Conversations with Roger Humphrey.